It is almost 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we are experiencing 31 degrees under fair skies. It has been a beautiful day. Out at the airport, they are reporting 96% humidity, west winds to 7 miles per hour, and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for sunny skies for the rest of the day. Northwest winds to 5 becoming calm. Partly cloudy overnight with a low of 30. West winds becoming calm. And for tomorrow, a chance of rain and snow turning into rain likely. Coming up on the Midday Report, lovers of chocolate and art we'll be happy to learn that the Chocolate Lovers Fling and Art Auction is back this year. The Sitka Assembly is moving forward with plans to donate money to the Alaska Trollers Association to support their ongoing legal fight. And more about eggs and the avian flu.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. 5 former Memphis police officers in Tennessee are jailed on a range of charges connected to the beating death of a 29-year-old black motorist. Shelby County District Attorney Steve Mulroy says the officers, all of whom are also black, are charged with second-degree murder, kidnapping, and a litany of other crimes against Tyree Nichols during a traffic stop on January 7th.
While each of the 5 individuals played a different role in the incident in question, the actions of all of them resulted in the death of Tyree Nichols, and they are all responsible.
Well, Roy says body cam footage of Nichols' encounter with the officers is expected to be released tomorrow night. The former officers were fired last week. Authorities expressed shock over what the body cam footage revealed. FBI Director Christopher Wray says, unfortunately, dealing with mishandling of classified documents has become, quote, regular part of the FBI's counterintelligence program for a number of years. NPR's Deepa Shivaram has details.
With document discoveries mounting up, the head of the FBI finds himself fielding reporters' questions about whether the system of accounting for classified information in the executive branch is broken.
People need to be conscious of the rules regarding classified information and appropriate handling of them. Those rules are there for a reason.
Christopher Wray would not comment on the specifics of any ongoing investigations. The Justice Department has already appointed special counsels to investigate the documents found in the homes of President Biden and former President Trump. Earlier this week, classified documents were also found in the home of former Vice President Mike Pence. Deepa Shivaram, NPR News, Washington.
The United States is imposing visa bans on more than 530 members of the Russian military and stepping up pressure on a private militia known as the Wagner Group. NPR's Michelle Kellerman reports the Biden administration is looking for ways to cut funding for Wagner, which has mercenaries in Africa and in Ukraine.
The U.S. describes the Wagner Group as a transnational criminal organization. And a top State Department official, Victoria Nuland, tells a Senate panel that the U.S. is imposing sanctions on those doing business with Wagner and looking for ways to cut off its funding streams, including in African gold mines.
They have access to gold mines in Mali and in Central African Republic. They are seeking more of that, and that directly funds the combat that they are engaged in Ukraine. So we're working on some of those measures.
Nuland says she's also worried about Wagner making inroads in Burkina Faso, and she says she's been warning that country's president not to let the Russian mercenaries in. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, the State Department.
At last check on Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 205 points or more than 0.5% at 33,949. This is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The Visitors Bureau, Discover Kodiak, and the Kodiak Maritime Museum are bringing back their Chocolate Lovers Fling and Art Auction. KMXT's Brian Venois reports they're looking for groovy artists to donate pieces for this year's auction.
The Chocolate Lovers Fling and Art Auction is an annual event where chocolatiers and art enthusiasts gather to taste some of the best cocoa confections around, as well as bid on pieces donated by local artists. It was canceled during the pandemic, but this year money raised will go towards a new sign for the St. Paul's Harbor downtown. Amy Williams is the executive director of Discover Kodiak.
I love the places where people can come take pictures, and being in tourism, I can't help but look at other destinations and see what they're doing and what signs they have as you're driving in and out of town. And Kodiak really doesn't have a great big, hey, you're in Kodiak sign.
She says the visitor center plans to create a beautiful area where tourists can take pictures and share the memories of visiting the island.
My goal is to make that one Instagram location where all visitors come to town want to stop and get their picture taken that says Kodiak and has the beautiful harbor behind it and has a little bit of history on the sign.
William says the new sign is part of a bigger effort to revitalize downtown.
Discover Kodiak kind of operates on a theory that we try to do things for locals and then tourists will come. So we want downtown to be somewhere that people who live here can celebrate and have events.
To make the event a success, William says they'll need the help of local artists to donate pieces.
We're looking for finished art pieces that someone could buy and just go home and hang on their wall. In the past, we've had sea glass sculptures, quilts, jewelry, things people knitted, fur things, just a wide variety of items. It can be art in any form or fashion.
Artists who choose to donate also have a shot at getting a bit of the cash, too. 30% of the winning bid goes back to the person who donated. The other 70% goes towards the new sign. As for the community's chocolatiers, Discover Kodiak has five categories to enter: baked goods, dipped items, candy, beverages, and spirits.
Chocolatiers literally just means anyone who wants to make something out of chocolate. So it sounds fancy, but it can be anyone. The rules are that you have to make a minimum of 5 dozen, which is 60 bite-sized samples to be sampled at the event.
Chocolatiers can win cookware for each category or cash prizes up to $500. The Chocolate Lovers Fling and Art Auction is in the Afognak Center on February 11. Our donations need to be brought to Discover Kodiak by February 3rd, and more information can be found on Discover Kodiak's website. And this year's theme is disco. Sue Williams advises folks bring their best threads and best vibes. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venois.
The Sitka Assembly is moving forward with plans to donate $25,000 to the Alaska Trollers Association to support the organization's ongoing legal fight against a Washington environmental group that hopes to shut down commercial fishing for king salmon in southeast Alaska. And other organizations and locals are piling on in anticipation of a lengthy and costly appeals process. KCAW's Catherine Rose has this report.
Alaska Trollers and the Alaska Department of Fish and Game intervened in a lawsuit against the National Marine Fisheries Service brought by the Wild Fish Conservancy in 2020. The Duval, Washington-based group argues that commercial trolling in Alaska threatens an endangered population of killer whales in Puget Sound by depriving them of king salmon, their primary food source, and they've been successful in court. In December, a U.S. District Court judge issued a report that, to make a long story short, puts the Southeast King salmon fishery at risk of closure. And that means a bigger hole in the Troll Association's pocket as it anticipates a lengthy appeals process. In early January, trollers drummed up support at the Sitka Assembly table. And at its January 24th meeting, more came out of the woodwork in support of the organization. Roger Hames of Hames Corporation, which owns a major grocery store in Sitka, said he'd been asked to contribute $5,000, but he'd likely contribute $10,000. Tad Fujioka is chairman of the board for Seafood Producers Co-op. He said the Alaska Trollers Association had requested around $48,000 from SPC, but employees asked them to donate more money from their profit-sharing pool.
Even though ATA only asked for $48,500, the SPC board voted to contribute $59,000. It's an investment in our company's future. We can't afford to lose access to troll salmon, and neither can Sitka. So I encourage the Assembly to be similarly farsighted and make this investment alongside your citizen fishermen.
And Jackie Foss said it's not just fishermen who've contributed to the trawler's cause. The ATA is receiving a lot of individual donations and contributions from municipalities like Craig, Port Alexander, and Pelican.
I feel super just grateful to live in a place where everyone's rallying around small boat fishermen. And so I know Sitka's the biggest and it's the most, and our ask might feel like a lot, but a third of the fleet is here. And donations, people give what they can, and small communities give what they can, and bigger communities with most of the fleet give what they feel is appropriate too.
Most Assembly members said they'd support a $25,000 donation to the legal fund, and some said they'd be open to contributing beyond that amount in the future. Assemblymember Tim Pike said he wanted to redirect the conversation around why the contribution was necessary.
As I heard it here a couple of times tonight, you know, trawlers paid a bunch of taxes, so we owe it to them. I don't see it that way. I see it as a community investment. I see it as coming out of all of our pockets. I see it as something for all of us to contribute to. I don't see it as the trawlers have earned this. Okay. You've earned it because you are Sitkins and you're part of our economy. But I think it belongs to all of us. It doesn't just belong to the trawlers.
Municipal Administrator John Leach said they'd be putting more resources towards supporting the ATA in the suit by working with Alaska's congressional delegation. He said city staff and lobbyists had a meeting with staff from Senators Murkowski and Sullivan and from Representative Peltola's office last week to discuss options.
It was reiterated by all staff members on the call that it's a very important issue for all three members of the delegation. They've found legal counsel with MSA and the Salmon Treaty expertise to assist them and are coordinating with each other regarding a possible amicus brief that they could file jointly with the court, and said they intend to circulate a draft internally among themselves as early as this week.
Along with a separate resolution supporting the Southeast Troll Fishery, the Assembly approved the $25,000 donation unanimously. The ordinance will come before the Assembly for a final reading at the next regular meeting on February 14th. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
A nationwide outbreak of the H5N1 strain of avian influenza is disrupting Alaska's supply of eggs, but the disease's impacts stretch far beyond the grocery store. With millions of migratory birds flying to Alaska this spring, understanding how the avian flu spreads in wild bird populations and the risks to human health and ecosystems is essential.
Last week in Homer, the refrigerated egg section at Saviemore was lit, but completely bare. Sitting in the deli, manager Mark Hemstreet describes a situation that is becoming familiar around Alaska. There simply aren't any eggs. Hemstreet says that Costco is Saviemore's main supplier and sources most of its eggs for Alaska from Washington State. With Washington's rise in cases of avian influenza in recent weeks, including a farm where over 1 million birds were culled, egg deliveries have been limited.
We used to get about a pallet 4 or 5 feet high of eggs 3 times a week. And now they'll give us, if they're available, just 2 packages of each variety.
Hemstreet says there's a similar story with the store's other vendor.
But the Super Value supplier has increased their costs, so we've had to, you know, match it here.
Nationally, egg prices have gone up 60%. Cases of the highly pathogenic H5N1 strain surfaced in the U.S. in March of last year and have impacted nearly every state. Over 58 million domestic birds are dead. Amber Betts, spokesperson for the Washington State Department of Agriculture, says controlling its transmission is difficult.
So with every case that we've seen, we've determined that there's been some sort of interaction or introduction via wild bird.
H5N1 is very contagious and can spread through exposure to ponds and food sources that might be shared with wild bird species.
It's devastating just all around. It's devastating for the flock owners. It's devastating for our veterinarians. It's a taxing virus for everyone, including the birds.
In Alaska, state veterinarian Bob Gerlach says there have only been 5 domestic flocks infected so far, but that could change with the seasonal migration of millions of wild birds this spring.
It's really important to go ahead and try to keep our awareness that this is going to be a long-term problem that we're going to be dealing with.
A warming Arctic may make wild bird populations more susceptible to avian influenza because of stress from other factors, he says. Climate change is already altering food availability for some migrating birds, for example, which Gerlach says makes understanding environmental pressures along their flyways even more important.
Health of the animal can impact the health of the environment, and the health of the environment and the animal can impact public health. So it's all interconnected.
Falk Hoopman is a professor of wildlife ecology at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. He says focusing primarily on mortality in poultry leaves big gaps in understanding how and why avian flu outbreaks occur.
You need ecological perspectives that includes climate change in this. If you don't have it, in my view, it's my personal opinion, it's 80% that we're missing about avian influenza.
Since wild birds can carry multiple strains of avian flu without necessarily showing symptoms, Hoopman says it's difficult to pinpoint or forecast how the virus might mutate or become more pathogenic.
In terms of these mutations, nobody knows when they happen. I mean, it's like a time bomb.
Even the term avian flu is an oversimplification for a disease that can infect many different species, he says. Researchers, for example, have found avian influenza in animals ranging from farmyard horses and pigs to seals and whales. In Alaska and Montana, even bears have recently tested positive for H5N1. That jump into mammals is something researchers are watching closely. In early January, a European study found a slightly mutated strain of H5N1 on a mink farm in Spain, which researchers suspect came from interactions with wild birds. World virologists are concerned because the virus has acquired a new mutation that allows it to more easily spread from mammal to mammal, a change making it more likely human-to-human transmission could occur in the future. In the coming months, Homer will see a huge influx of migratory birds, and Gerlach advises Alaskans to stay informed about avian flu.
We know from looking at the wild bird populations that it's not over, and it seems to be that there's going to be a risk come spring.
Back at Saviemore, Hemstreet says he doesn't see a simple solution for egg supplies in the near future. And while he's always excited to source eggs locally, he knows it's a tough time for people to part with them. Reporting in Homer, I'm Sean McDermott.
The State Division of Behavioral Health has reached out to the operators of a Delta Junction area drug rehab facility where a patient shot two men to death last week. But as KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, agency officials say they have no authority to investigate the facility.
A Behavioral Health Division spokesperson says the Alaska Rehabilitation Center has a current business license, but it's not enrolled with Alaska Medicaid and it's not a behavioral health grantee, so the agency has no oversight authority to exercise in the case. The spokesperson declined to talk on tape, but she said in an email Wednesday that, quote, "We have reached out to the organization as we recognize the magnitude of the tragedy on such a small community and to ensure any additional behavioral health support for the community and its residents is available," unquote. A couple of men at the rehab facility near Delta declined to talk Monday, 3 days after 33-year-old patient Daniel Surkov of North Pole shot two men who reportedly were trying to get him to surrender prescription drugs and cigarettes. It's not clear whether the two victims worked at the facility or were fellow patients. Serge Pankov, the Alaska Rehab Center director, declined to talk about that Wednesday. And an Alaska State Trooper spokesperson says the agency doesn't release that information. But a man who lives about a half mile from the facility, who asked to remain anonymous, says he's never had a problem with the people who live there. He said Monday that he didn't even know the facility had become a rehab center until he got a call from a friend about 6 months ago informing him that it would begin operation soon.
And that's all that we heard and all that we knew about it, and we hadn't heard anything at all until yesterday.
The man said his son was so concerned about the murders Sunday that he reconnoitered his property looking for a gunman or any sign that he'd been there.
He went out and looked around in the shop and the greenhouse to make sure there was no tracks or anybody around because we didn't know if the guy was loose. And
the man says he's frustrated with minimal information that was made available following the shooting, although troopers posted a basic report about it and Surkov's arrest Friday afternoon.
A double murder in Delta Junction and you hear nothing on the news? That's odd.
According to charging documents, Surkov emptied two clips from a 9mm handgun into the victims and a dog outside the house on the facility's compound. He then drove to Fairbanks and first went to the South Cushman shooting range, where he fired off some rounds before heading over to a Midtown gun store, where he had his 9mm cleaned. Then he went to the Fairbanks Police Department and tried to turn himself in for shooting the dog and violating the terms of his release from jail for an earlier assault case by possessing a weapon. Troopers arrested Surkov shortly thereafter, and an investigator said Surkov admitted killing the two men. He's now being held at Fairbanks Correctional Center on two counts of first-degree murder and two lesser counts. Bail is set at $2 million, and a preliminary hearing is set for Tuesday. In Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
Better than expected growth for the U.S. economy. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute. In the final 3 months of last year, the nation's gross domestic product grew at a 2.9% annual rate above analyst forecasts. That puts GDP growth for all of last year at a solid 2.1%. Many economists expect a slowdown this year and likely a recession. One sign of a softening economy came today in a measure of orders for non-defense capital goods. This measure, which excludes aircraft, is considered a proxy for business spending plans, and it declined 0.2% in December compared to the month prior. The job market, though, remains healthy. Initial claims for unemployment benefits last week fell to a seasonally adjusted 186,000. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by JLL, shaping the future of real estate for a better world.
It's a tough time, but each of us can make a difference in the lives of Alaskans. All you have to do is give via Pick, Click, Give by supporting Alaska's nonprofits when you apply for your PFD. You aren't just donating. You're giving more opportunity, more hope, more chances. You're changing the lives of Alaskans with the click of a button. Don't forget to Pick, Click, Give when you fill out your PFD application this year.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the 26th day of January, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 9:24. It will set again at 5:21. That will give us 7 hours and 57 minutes of daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 7 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 46 degrees. That was set in 1925. And our record low is minus 2, set in 1973. Currently, it's 36 degrees under fair skies. Out at the airport, they are showing northwest winds to 6 miles per hour, 86% humidity, and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for sunny skies for the rest of the afternoon, high near 37, northwest winds to 5, becoming completely calm later. Partly cloudy overnight tonight, low of about 30, west winds to 5, becoming completely calm this evening. And for tomorrow, a chance of rain and snow between 9 a.m. and noon, turning to a high likelihood of rain. Mostly cloudy skies tomorrow with a high near 38, calm winds turning to the southeast, around 5 miles per hour tomorrow afternoon. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up at 5:10 p.m. here on the east side. That will be a 7.9-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 11:20 this evening of 0.2 of a foot. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 5:44 p.m. and be 12.8 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 11:58, just about midnight, of 0.7. Mariners, be aware, here is your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak. You do have a small craft advisory for today. Southwest 20, seas to 9 feet today. For tonight, southwest 15, seas to 7 feet. And for tomorrow, southeast 20, seas to 7 feet on our east side. Friday night through Monday, southeast 20, seas to 8 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, Small craft advisory for tomorrow. Southwest 20 today, seas to 5 feet. Southwest 15 tonight, seas to 4 feet. For tomorrow on our west side, northeast 15, increasing to 25 in the afternoon. Seas building to 7 feet by the afternoon. And for Friday night, northeast 25, seas to 8 feet in the Shelikof. Saturday through Monday on our west side, northeast 20, seas to 6 feet. Well, the Kodiak Senior Center is in need of paper bags. Please bring your clean, untorn paper bags to the Senior Center for their home-delivered lunch and pickup meal services, and they'd like to thank you for doing so. The Kodiak Wildlife Refuge is hosting a nature journaling night that's free for adults, teens, and youth with adult supervision. Stop by between 4 and 6 p.m. today, January 26th, and it sounds pretty cool. Bring your own supplies or use provided supplies. The theme will be creating snow imagery with watercolors, and no experience is necessary. Again, that's between 4 and 6 p.m. today at the Kodiak Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center downtown. Can we talk museums for a moment? Whose objects deserve a place on the shelves? Whose story deserves a spot in the permanent gallery? Whose perspectives are the most important? Well, the answer is yours. The Kodiak History Museum is making space for your perspective, but they need to hear from you first. What stories would you like to see shared in their new temporary exhibit? Tell them why your idea is museum-worthy, and they will make it happen. You can visit them online at kodiakhistorymuseum.org or give them a call at 907-486-5920 for more information. Kodiak City Council will be having a regular council meeting tonight at 7:30 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library. The meeting is open to the public, and public members are also encouraged to tune in right here at KMXT on 100.1 FM. The meeting will also be web-streamed, and that link, as well as meeting packets, are available at the City of Kodiak website. Contact the city clerk for more information at 907-486-8636. And other meetings coming up in the Kodiak Island Borough include tonight's meeting of Fire Protection Area Number 1. Their board is having a work session at the Bayside Fire Hall at 6 p.m. Also tonight, the Assembly is having a work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. Next Tuesday, the Assembly will be having a special meeting also in the Borough Assembly Chambers. That's happening at 11:30 a.m. next Tuesday. And on Wednesday, February 1st, the Assembly will be having a special meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers. That's happening at 12:15 p.m. And finally, on Thursday, February 2nd, the Assembly will be having their regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers. That's happening at the regular time, 6:30 p.m., February 2nd. The Alaska Business Development Center will be providing in-person tax preparation again in many villages throughout rural Alaska. If you live in rural Alaska, don't send in your tax documents to ABCD yet. There's a good chance their preparers are coming out to you. To stay updated on whether ABDC is preparing taxes in your community, visit their website. That's at www.abdc.org. Kodiak's Refuge Salmon Camp registration lottery is open. The Kodiak Wildlife Refuge will be having salmon summer science camps for students going into kindergarten through eighth grade. Find registration packets on the Kodiak Island Wildlife Refuge website or stop by the Refuge Visitor Center downtown. Packets are available at the front door or inside during open hours, which is Wednesday through Friday from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. And don't forget the deadline to enter the lottery is March 31st. The University of Alaska Fairbanks Geophysical Institute is hosting free public talks about interesting subjects, including tracking space debris, fostering education using the outdoors, new techniques for understanding aurora, the 1964 Great Alaska Earthquake, and climate change and its effects on Alaska's wildlife. It's the 2023 Science for Alaska Lecture Series, and it begins next Tuesday, February 7th, and it runs every Tuesday through March 7th. Talks all begin at 7 p.m. They're being held in campus in person on campus, but we can all listen in and watch via Zoom. And that Zoom link is available by contacting Rod Boyce. That's at 907-474-7185. Or you can email him at rcboyce, that's rcboyce, at alaska.edu.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.